This show is not for the easily offended, so if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
No guarantees in podcasting.
This is true.
In safe mode. There's no safe mode in podcasting.
No, nothing is safe.
I gotta live on the edge with this podcasting.
Well, welcome back to Indie Comic Book Noise, episode 382. We're the Indie Comic Book Noise people, and we are Andrew the L.A. Rabbit, Kevin, WWX Kev up in Canada.
You kind of mumbled his name there.
And that was Phil, the Ottawa Otter, coming from Ottawa.
Or Phil.
And Super Steve Raker from the Bunker.
Hey there.
And we are here. We are the podcast that is sponsored by, we're part of the Deliberate Noise Network. You can find us at IndieComicBookNoise.com and through links there and iTunes and other fabulous podcast catchers. We are the show that talks about every non-2 book you can possibly imagine. And you can also hear us over on Marvel Noise sometimes. You know, not all the time, but once in a while. Well, probably most episodes, I'd say. Well, at least one of the four of us.
That's what I was going to say.
Every 2 weeks. That's the show you can count on coming out like clockwork.
Hey. And that's also the show that's all ages appropriate. There may be some swearing in this show, but only as strictly artistically required.
It feels like we've been recording this one every week.
Well, I think it's weekly recording. Whether it comes out every week is another story.
Sorry about that. I've been kind of sitting on an episode because I've been just running around crazy, keeping my head above water this week.
It's like my Image comic that I'm going to cover this week says it's around weekly. Like the date it's released, it's around that date. So we're more weekly than last year.
Well, you guys that sounds are doing like your a, part.
That sounds like a pretty good tease there, Kevin. Why don't you start us off with our first book of the week?
Oh, so I got to change my number one book now. All right.
Wow. He put that much thought into it.
I know, I gotta know all my books.
He's got like a leadoff hitter, and then once he figures he's got someone on base, he can bat in the next guy.
But by the fourth inning, I've already switched up the pitchers. I'm like, okay, Valiant, you're up now.
Oh, no.
You can bring it home.
That's when I go for my beer nuts.
A lot of Valiant number now, so Kevin has lots to cover.
No, I couldn't get enough Suicide Squad and Thunderbolts. So that's how I came to this. Seriously. Does any of you guys know the Regulators?
A little bit. Just from preview pages and ads.
But I mentioned Thunderbolts because we have the writer is Kurt Busiek here. Penciled by Ron Randall. Inked by Dan Davis. And apparently, Busiek created one of the characters in this issue.
Huh.
So is Ron Randall the regular penciler on that? I know he has his Trekker book he has, too.
Well, I guess he was supposed to be the regular penciler. Because the series only goes 3 issues. Even though in the 3rd issue, there's like a preview of the 4th issue cover. And as far as I'm aware, that issue never came out.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's a mystery.
Yeah.
Boy, that's like a classic. That's classic Image.
I know. So this is like 1995 Image. And it's that era of comics where they put images behind your credits and your letters page and everything. So it's hard to read what it is.
I hate that. That's rough.
Why am I always running across this type of thing? It's like they have a fact file in the middle of the issue. And you can see like the credits, like the creators' names are in white, but as for what they're doing, it's like red on a purple background. And I'm just like, why? Why? Why 1995? Why? So yeah, Proto Thunderbolts book. Because apparently these guys, as it says on the cover, they ain't role models. Because it's a villain book. So apparently these dudes first showed up in an issue of Shadowhawk. So you have a guy named Blackjack, but without the C. And then you have, like, a whirlwind. Oh, you have a Whirlwind knockoff called Vortex, but without the E.
I remember him from the Shadowhawk comic.
But Blackjack is like this, I guess, like Macho Man, ladies man type of guy. And he has like the chains going, the spikes, the straps, the ponytail, like typical 90s.
Does he speak with a bad French accent?
Sadly, no. And then you have this guy that's on fire called Arson.
Yeah, I think I liked him. I remember liking him.
You have someone called Hard Edge. And then someone you don't realize is going to be part of the team, but it's spoiled for you when there's a poster, like, in the middle of the book.
Who is it?
It is...
You don't even know who it is.
Scandal.
Without a C. No.
But it's funny, like...
I don't know who that is.
So he first shows up in this issue, like, for one panel, and then it goes to, like, the mini poster in the middle, and then she's part of the team. So you're like, okay, I guess that mysterious character joins the team later in this comic. So each issue is, like, supposed to focus on one character. Like, they're basically the guy that's the narrator giving you their thoughts about all their, like, crazy villainous activities. And then the second issue is, it's Vortex, however you say it. And then the third issue was Arson. So, like, you have the regular storyline going, but you always had one character, like, it focuses in on them as they're up to their activities. Basically giving their thoughts, like a Thunderbolts issue where they're like, telling it how it is. So I just thought this was pretty hilarious, like, as a proto type of thing. Like, this is 1995. So, like, there's an ad for Astro City in here, which is just starting up. And I'm like, it won't be far off before, like, a Marvel Comics comes out with similar. Yeah, it's funny. Scandal is actually, like, your blonde hair, Carla Sofen type of character, it seems like. And then the letters page, like, Jim Valentino goes off on, like, oh, I always wanted to know what would happen if the villains, like, actually succeeded and conquered the world and all this stuff. And then, like, good thing I found Kurt Busiek, who also wondered this. And I'm like, yeah, funny. He's going to be playing out some of those themes in an upcoming book.
Nice.
There is some interesting stuff in here, though. It's not just, like, 90s cliches. Like, it's almost veering into, like, nudity territory, but sort of, like, covering up, like,
smoke.
Yeah, like smoke. Like, strategically and, like the bed or something. Like, two characters are in bed and you're like, oh, there's just happens to be something there. Like, they almost go all the way, but not quite.
Wah, wah.
Did Shadowhawk make an appearance?
No. But I think in one of the later issues, he's supposed to show up, at least for a flashback or something. But they're basically setting up, planning, like, all these crimes. And apparently they left, like, this other guy that used to be on their team. And that guy's beating him to, like, all their jobs. So they go to, like, they steal this, like, armored car or something. They would open it up and there would be, like, a post-it note saying, hey, I beat you here. And the guy's name was, like, Vendetta. So then later on, like, they basically figure out, like, the guy's got the place bugged or something. That's how he hears all their plans, so he can get there before them. So they just do a simple smash and grab later on. So, and then they figure they can fence the goods.
Did you guys have, like, a favorite Image comic, like, hero back then? Like, when Image was big then?
I wasn't into Image then.
No. Mine was Backlash. I love Backlash. And Savage Dragon.
I guess my closest interest would be something like just the visual of Shadowhawk. Like, I remember designing a character that looked similar to Shadowhawk. And then I Savage Dragon.
I read and enjoyed who was the writer? Mesner Loebs and Mike Diodato, when he was young, they had a run on DC's Wonder Woman book as it approached, I don't know, like 100 or 200 or something like that. And I enjoyed that. And then he went over to an Image book and drew Glory.
Okay, yeah, I read a bit
for a while.
That.
And I enjoyed some of those Cheesecake type books, but mm-hmm. I really didn't wasn't digging the Image stuff. I liked when they did their work at Marvel, but when they left and started their own thing, everything seemed like you know, second rate versions of stuff. And I,
oh, absolutely,
I
kinda, yeah.
I was pretty cynical and felt like it was a lot of fluff, mm-hmm. and didn't like the publishing schedules that they were not able to keep up and stuff. And I let Savage Dragon go under the radar until almost issue 50.
Same for me. I was the same way.
Yeah. And then I picked it up, and then I went back and got the old trades and totally binged one summer and caught all back up and was like, how did I let this go? I should have trusted in Larson.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned shipping schedules, and all over this comic, whenever they advertise something, it's like on sale on or around July 18th. And see, I'm like, yes, on or around that date.
Most of those Image books I found in dollar bins, so that's why I didn't have to worry about that too much.
It also says get them while they're hot in this one ad, and apparently Busick was also writing the new Shadowhawk. Did not know that.
You really?
Yeah. Huh. So I don't know how many different Shadowhawk books there were, but obviously were more than I knew about.
I think there were at least 3 miniseries, and then later on there was a kid who took over and had his own short series or something.
There's also, I wonder about these ads, though, because they have an ad for Scud the Disposable Assassin on the back.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what did that go, like 18, 15 issues or something? Oh.
I'm pretty sure that went more than that, because my friend has an Omnibus, and it's pretty big.
But I think it came back to finish it.
Yeah, but I'm sure it was in the 20s or 30s.
Yeah, but I just wonder, like, putting an ad for an indie comic, and it just says you send your money, you check off a thing, and it says send me the latest issue, or send me, like, mm-hmm. the latest 3 issues, and I'm like, if they don't have a regular schedule, I'm like, or what if the series just, like, ends in the middle of a storyline. Well,
if something ends, I think they just send you something else.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Do they send you your money back? Like, there's no guarantee.
I remember doing one of those when I was young. I think it was Fantastic Four and Silver Surfer I got or something.
Well, at least it's Marvel. Like, just sending it to a random indie company in the 90s, I'm like, ooh, I don't know. Living dangerously.
Hell yeah.
Oh, and also on the letters page, it says that the first arc is a 6-issue arc. And then I bought the 3 issues, and I'm like, ooh, guess they didn't make it. So I don't know why. Like, I tried to look it up before the show, but I couldn't really find much information on these regulators.
I lived dangerously this past new Comic Book Wednesday when I was scoping around on the new Comixology submit comics, you know? And came across a one-shot, a $4 one-shot for a digital comic. That's more than I usually want to pay, but it was 50 pages of story plus like 10 or more pages of back matter. It was like a 67-page total package. So and the concept was intriguing, and the cover really grabbed me, as it will you guys when I share it on the Facebook page and on the Twitter. And that is Dr. Ludator. By Kari A. Sivonen, S-I-H-V-O-N-E-N. And there is a Kari, K-A-R-I, Sihovin.com, apparently. But this is from their imprint, UDI Comics, Uncorrect Undead Information. And like I said, it's like 50-plus pages of story. It boasts... the subtitle after Dr. Ludator, Bizarre and Believable. And there are 3 weird strips. And this guy, this doctor, he's a total like white lab coat wearing guy. And he's always seems to be like in some financial trouble because he's got tons of class action suits against him at any one given time. Because he's just got tons of schemes. That seems to be his thing. He's got one idea after another that seems like a great idea and then has some type of bad outcome, like some bodybuilding, muscle-building drug that then turns everybody into fat, you know, quickly after that, or some skin cream that starts working great but then has some sort of irreversible damage afterwards. Or he had a new drug, a Refrexo Multitascum, that greatly heightened his customers' cognitive capabilities, thinking he would make a ton marketing it, like, for college students who are cramming for exams and stuff. But it's so many people started taking them, enjoying being intellectual, that at night, the unexpected side effect, the brains would like come out of people's heads and like grow little legs and run around the city and go run in the library and like learn, because they still got the eyeballs attached to it via the optic nerve. So it's like these little brains running around in a big group with little legs, and they're all in the library reading, learning all night, because this drug is making them want to learn. And then they go back into people's heads, and it wasn't hurting the people, but people weren't happy with it. And so then he's got to like chase after the brains and get them, and then come up with a solution. And he makes these like helmets that people have to wear for like a week to retrain their brains to stay in their heads overnight. But it's just kooky. I found it really enjoyable, and the art was really pleasant and all in color. And he's got another book out under the same imprint, this UDI Comics, that looks like it's a takeoff on the old EC, like, you know, Terror from the Crypt kind of stuff. So I might check that out. It also had a $4 price point, so I was hesitant to, you know, drop $8 on a whim. But after checking out the first helping of his work, I'm going to check out more.
Jeez, was it a big page count on the second one?
Yeah, I believe it was.
You get this brain to learn for you, goes back in your head, and you're like, I know everything.
The cover's got him with, like, you know, stuff scattered around his table, and like a little brain with some electrodes, like on alligator clips attached to it, just out on his table. And I'm like, all right, this it looks like an adventure for me. I like that scientist stuff.
What we got next?
Well, hey, I read something from Image that's got me super excited. It's probably my favorite thing by Scott Snyder so far. Severed. Did you guys ever hear that one?
Yes.
It's something I've been sitting on since, I guess, 2013. I just never seen the book trades anywhere for some reason. I don't know if it wasn't a big seller or very popular.
I thought it was like a hardcover or something.
I just got the soft cover. I never saw a hardcover.
Yeah. Seems weird. He wouldn't put that through Vertigo or whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I guess he was writing Batman there at DC at the time, eh? Around the same time.
Yeah, he was probably starting out with...
Yeah, I hear that Batman is mildly successful.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Vertigo wasn't doing much at the time, though, so that's probably...
Yeah, exactly. True. Vertigo wasn't the place to go for a while.
No, now it would be, but well, not back then.
He was trying to get his shit together.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, Severed... he co-wrote it with Scott Tuft, and Attila Futaki drew it. And I don't know that artist, but it's really beautiful, like kind of a almost painted look, a bit old style. And basically what it is it starts off and there's an old man missing an arm with his grandkids and everything. And one of his grandkids run up to him and says, this man wanted me to give it to you. And it's a letter, which is from his past, you could tell. And then all of a sudden it just jumps into a flash, like back into the past when he was a kid. And basically he's an adopted kid, and he's getting letters from his father, who's a musician. So he basically runs away from home and jumps on a train to go meet his father. And at the same time, it follows a character, this old man, who will pick up homeless kids and stuff off the road, and then he has these really sharp teeth. Like those are his real teeth, or like these shark teeth. And he's basically like a cannibal, because he filed them down type of thing. And he's pretty much, he kills the kids, eats them. And that's the cool thing about this comic, is it never hides who the bad guy is. So the whole time, you know, kind of what's coming in a way. Because obviously the old man was missing an arm right at the beginning. And so the whole time you're waiting for something like that to happen. And basically, yeah, so the kid on the train meets this girl that dresses up as a guy just so it's safer for her. And they end up becoming friends. And they end up meeting with the old man, who kind of tricks them into thinking he's a salesman. And there's just creepy, creepy stuff going on with their interaction of the three of them. And the girl knows something's up, so tries to like contact the work that he says he's from or whatever. And they're like, oh, he's been missing for a long time. And so he ends up eating her, which was like a horror, like just a horrific moment, because the character work between the two was just great. My only complaint about this whole series is it seemed like the end was really rushed, and it needed one more issue, because the stuff with the old man, like in the like the present, where he's missing the arm, they only had two pages to wrap that up, and they didn't even really wrap it up when you were kind of waiting to see what went on with that the whole time. Hmm. But other than that, though, it was... yeah, I can't believe I waited so long to read this. It was a really good read. Like I say, probably my favorite Scott Snyder thing. Hmm. Way better than that dumb Batman dude.
Yeah, do the Batman stuff. I'm probably more willing to try something like that out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the new title. I had a rebirth. A dumb Batman.
Is that that's a funny play on what's going on in the series right now, actually. He's lost all memory of being Batman, and he's just Bruce Wayne.
Is that really? That's what's going on?
He has a Batman machine, actually. So if he ever stops being Batman, like, it could force him back to being... It's weird.
That's okay, because we have kickboxer Bruce Gordon now, or Jim Gordon.
Exactly.
Andrew, you've been far too silent.
Well, this the is blood. A fairly recent one from the dig out.
What?
The Flood Recovery.
There we go.
This one is a Kadoja Terror Mountain Showdown. And I actually have all five issues. I've said this before. I generally get your first issue at the table. But if you run a sweet deal, I'll run the series. So I don't know if you have the, you know, creators know their own budgets and everything. But if you can find a way to run a deal, a lot of times you'll get, you know, I'll buy them all if there's like, I don't remember what the deal was, but there was some kind of, well, first issue was this much, but if you get all five, it's this much. And
Yeah, I've done that before too, where they'll be like, oh, this issue is like $3 or something, but then they drop the dollar amount if you buy everything. And then you're just like, oh, that doesn't seem that much money.
So this is Keith Foster, the writer, Rory Smith, artist, and with some cover work. What's nice is they have front and back covers. And what's kind of odd is their first issue is a glossy cover, and the rest are more traditional covers. And I don't know if that was just for the make the first issue kind of different. If I didn't go through into a page, kind of feels slightly lighter maybe than a regular Big Two comic, but nothing egregious. And the artwork is very scratchy, sort of black and white with gray tones. And basically, it's a giant monster story. So the government was working on building this giant monster, and somehow they're running a test, and it goes haywire and comes to life. And it starts destroying the city, and it's exhibited some way. It learns tactics and everything. So when they send planes and tanks after it, it figures out how to defeat it. So it has some kind of, it's a weird mix of like organic and technological. But then what happens is somehow at the same time, there's like this convergence these scientists discover where it's like a awakening of all these beasts. So this giant snake beast comes out and he obviously gets in a fight with the other monster. So it's like a big monster fight in the five issues. And then the end, you know, it obviously ends with a tease about, you know, hey, this is going to, you know, we've hit the age of monsters or whatever. More are coming. Like, that's the last panel.
Like the apocalypse of monsters.
Mm.
So it's the next one is supposed to be Valley of the Giants. What's interesting about the book is no indicia, which I have never seen. Wow. Or maybe I must have. But that's super rare, even for as indie as you get. So that's kind of, that's why I don't have
a publisher. Yeah, I mean, usually they even put in like a little parody one or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Some kind of joke. These guys are musicians. The one guy is in the band Big Pimp Jones. I don't know that band. So they had this comic idea. So they have, the only ads are like to check out the music that's supposed to go with the comic. I did not. I don't really listen to new music, as you guys know.
Well, of course not. If it's not in a Disney movie, you don't know it.
So, I think the character designs are really expressive, and I like them a lot. I will say, once in a while, and this is not totally uncommon, and maybe it's me, the storytelling, especially with the giant monsters, can be a little tough. I like the black and white's no problem, but sometimes I think it's difficult working in that kind of scale if something happens, sort of communicate, because the monster transforms. And it, I had to kind of reread it a few times to sort of figure out how, from panel to panel, how the transition sequence happened. It's not meant as like a big slam or anything. And like I said, maybe I'm just, you know, I get stuff backwards all the time. But while I think the figure work is nice and I like the expressions and the characters, that was my only hesitation about it, is that I think it's tough. Like when he's having the generals in the offices, that part works fine, but sometimes showing the big monster fighting the planes or fighting each other, especially with a scratchy style, it can be tough to delineate exactly what's what. But with any of these things, like with Godzilla or whatever, it's all about balancing the story of watching the monsters punch each other versus the people. And I thought it was a decent, maybe a little bit too much people, because who really cares about the people? But they always have to have some plot line about people. And this one is the general that used to be in charge of the program. She's trying to find a way, and she finds like a back door they built in. If you broadcast this signal, but you have to get really close. So she goes in and shoots the, you know, so that's the people storyline. But, you know, you guys read giant monster books. You want to see the giant monsters.
Well, it depends, because the
nope.
No, with the latest Godzilla, like there was two different people stories, or maybe three. But, like, only one of the people stories, like, I really wanted to see more of. And it was, like, only a short thing with the movie. Like, I could have watched Bryan Cranston do some crazy stuff at a factory, like, for an hour before Godzilla shows up. But, like, they dispose of him quickly. And then it's, like, this other dude that's just, like, on the periphery of the action. And I'm like, yeah, I don't care about this guy. Get back to the guy from Breaking Bad type of thing, you know.
If you're not showing the big monster, you better be showing me a pretty, pretty girl. That's all I'm saying.
Well, the head general is a lady, so there's that. I like I said, I would definitely check out a book by the artist again, Smith. But I don't, I just think that this maybe wasn't the pairing. I mean, it's good, but it didn't blow my socks off to the degree that I feel like. I'm glad I got the whole story. I don't feel like I'm short. I also just think that it felt like it was almost like a movie, which for you guys, which for some people is a good thing, but for me, it's generally not in a comic. I feel like, you know, the comic should take more advantage in this read like a monster movie in a way, you know, like the people storyline and then split with the monster storyline.
Well, it doesn't really have to do that with a comic. Like, with a movie, I could see, like, you would have a budget, so you could only have the monster on the screen for so often, yeah. But a comic can just be a comic.
Yeah, so that's part where like I said, for some people, I don't think they mind, but for me, I want my comic to be a little bit more less reading, like, oh, I could have watched a movie
exactly
of this.
Like you've always read in the past, because you're a grumpy old man.
Well, that's only my Marvel and DC comics. But that's Kadoja Terror Mountain Showdown. Again, don't know the publisher because there's no indicia. I mean, obviously they're self-publishing it to some degree. But he is the guy in the band Big Pimp Jones. I don't know what sort of music that is.
You could have done a little research. At least listen to one song, sampled it.
Ugh, I don't listen to music, Phil.
Hey, I heard you listening to your, what was it, your disco or something from the 70s the other day?
Yeah, the other day I did get in a 70s soul music vibe, but that was a special instance of, like, I also feel if I'm buying your comic book, it should be standing on its own. I mean, if you want supplemental material, that's great, but I'm buying the comic book, not your music.
Mm-hmm.
So they weren't selling, like they didn't have CDs from their band, like on the same table as, or can't remember anymore.
I can't remember. Okay. And it would have, I wouldn't have even, that would have just been a no, nothing for me. I don't, that's not my bag is to, but I think that I don't remember. Also why, I guess you might get, but I don't think the comic book crowd is really looking to buy a bunch of albums or anything.
I don't know. A lot of comic people seem to be pretty into music.
Yeah, music's over.
Music's over.
Steve and Kevin like music a lot.
I need to get back into music. That's what I listen to podcasts.
That's about it.
I know. It's like I get to put music on, or I can like listen to that podcast. I'm like, oh, I'll put on a comic podcast. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm not really listening to music.
Yeah, I definitely go that way. It depends on what you're doing, what your life's activities are. When I'm doing more like chores that are, you know, just manual labor things like yard work or clearing snow, which I haven't had to do much of this winter, unfortunately. Then those are the times when I can listen to people talking and actually focus on it. But if I'm doing stuff where I got to be thinking or I'm focusing on something else, then I like to have music on in the background. So, it just varies back and forth. I get into music phases and, fall way behind on the podcast listening like right now. And then other times I'm, exactly the opposite. I'm like, holy cow, I haven't listened to a whole concert in a long time, you know?
Well, if I'm organizing comics, I want to put on some X-Files. I got to get through those.
Whew. Well, I mean, I listen to old music still, but I just don't listen to that much new music that often.
But do you just let I wonder this. Do you let the, like, YouTube just go, like, on to the next song? And it seems no that's way. What you do.
No, sometimes. Well, I don't let it pick. I pick, but it always has suggestions.
Yeah.
Like, 15 suggestions. And sometimes I'll just tell it what I want, and sometimes I'll just surf from suggestion to suggestion.
It's interesting. It reminds me of those guys, like when you go to TCAF, like since it's in a library, they have like, I don't know, like 100 computers there. And like there's these guys that are just there all day with their headphones on, and they're like watching some videos or listening to some music, and they're just there the whole time having like a great time, like just YouTubing like the song after song after song, it seems like.
I'm so old, I remember when you used to go to the library to watch movies. I remember watching the French Breathless, the original one, not the Richard Gere one.
Ooh.
I'm like this clunky VCR with giant headphones attached and everything.
No, this is definitely the modern library with like 3D printers and like all that stuff.
Well, what have you got? I think the wheel has landed back on Kevin. So.
Oh, sweet.
Wait a minute, he's got to resort his list.
Now, I got another Valiant number one for you guys.
It might be the same one I have, because when you said you were getting a Valiant
I'm conned.
You did that again. You did that to me last time.
Well, it seems like a lot of buddy books are returning at the same time, but this is The Adventures of Archer and Armstrong. A, they're back.
Yes, I got the blank sketch cover, even though I haven't gotten a sketch on a sketch cover in a while. I still keep acquiring them for some reason.
Wow.
But then your fingerprints are going to get all over them.
But it's usually those rough covers that are hard to draw on, so it actually might be more difficult on those covers than the regular material.
Well, I've been forgetting to... I have a stack of them, and I need to find people to sketch on them, but... I don't know. For some reason, they kind of amuse me.
Mm-hmm. It's a neat idea for sure.
So this number one is by Rafer Roberts and David LaFuente with Ryan Wynn and Brian Reber. I guess it was just recently, within the last few days, that Valiant said they have like 15 exclusives. And I was happy that LaFuente has made the jump from Marvel to Valiant like full time. So I was like, yes. Because I definitely did enjoy his work on, like, Ultimate Spider-Man and stuff like that.
Hey, you don't need to tear Marvel down to make Valiant feel good.
Yeah.
We're not that type of show, Kevin.
It seems like Marvel had...
Which of the two evils do I pick?
I don't know. It's just weird. Like, I don't know when his... Like, at some point, it seems his work dropped off over there. Like, I don't really know what happened. Like, it was just weird. And then he shows up at Valiant, and I'm like, yeah. Like, I'm going to be reading that. I'm going to be seeing more of his work. That's awesome.
No wonder he's not on any new books.
What's weird, because he was on a Bendis book, and I thought, like, Bendis usually... Like, once you're on a Bendis book for, like, a long run, doesn't he usually just put you on to, like, the next Bendis book or something?
He takes care of his guys.
Exactly.
Switched over to Guardians or something.
But anyways, this is after a 25-issue run of awesomeness and hilarity. The book is back with... this sort of new reader-friendly take. Like, stuff has obviously happened from the other book, but I think if you pick this one, you wouldn't necessarily know, like, where things have gone. Like, you would just think that things were always like the way it is.
So they rebooted?
No.
No. They don't do an origin. It just starts with them being as a team. And it gives a little caption. Like, it's literally like one sentence for each of them.
Yeah, it says, like, Armstrong, a 6,000-year-old hedonistic immortal, archer, teenager, expert martial artist, and marksman.
Whiny baby.
Well, he had a weird upbringing anyways in, like,
cult.
Like a church theme park where, like, cavemen were hanging out with dinosaurs, and it was quite...
I swear the comic's good.
But it seems like Armstrong in this issue is a little down because he had this, since he's immortal, he had like a friend in the past and like he's passed on. So he has this like satchel, like infinite satchel that he's pulled things out of before or hid things in. And now he's looking for a specific like wine bottle. And that's when I would say, Andrew, when the comic becomes an Adventure Time episode where he... like ties like a rope to himself, it seems like, and he like goes into the bag and wacky adventures ensue.
Well, I like I will say in La Fuente's credit, like, he really has a lot of different body types. Like, I like his archer is kind of short and stocky, but not like Wolverine stocky, but just kind of like short but sort of built. But Armstrong is definitely like fat. Like,
nope. Yeah, he's not in shape. Yeah.
Like, strong, he's not a big guy. Like, he's a big guy, but he's not. Sometimes the big guys look a little too muscly or whatever, but he's got like a giant stomach and everything you can see in a few panels. So I like the only thing I don't like is he does the nose thing where it's like a little geometric shape at the end of the nose.
You know, that reminds me of something like Sal Buscema or something where he would put like a little squiggle. And as a kid, I was always like, what's with the squiggle?
But that's a pretty fairly petty take on mine. It's just, I never like, or they'd sometimes do a different color on the end or whatever.
Yeah.
I guess that gives it depth or something. But other than that, I mean, you know, it's these Valiant books are just of a big two quality as far as storytelling and conveying the meaning and everything and having it go through.
I definitely, like, you kind of wonder, because the original writer was Fred Vinlante, so you kind of wonder if the new writer is, like, going to be able to get the humor right and everything, but I definitely laughed aloud at several moments in here where Archer's, like, coming into Armstrong's room, and he says, sir, do you have pants on? Like, stuff like that, I was just bawling and going, oh, boy. Because they also have, like, a thing for Audible. For this, apparently they're doing like some of the comics as some kind of Audible comic type of things, and they show that variant cover where Armstrong is like naked and surrounded by like all these women, and then Archer's just like, yeah, he's not having it.
Well, this is my first of the new Valiant, and maybe it's just me, but it seems like the pages kind of stick together. Does that happen to you, Kevin?
What are you doing with your comics? No, I don't think I noticed that, Andrew.
Because I read it, like, suddenly I have to make sure, because it'll jump in the story. I'm like, wait, and then I got to go and, like, really do that, where you really rub your fingers to separate them out.
You think it's, the L.A. Heat or something that sticks your pages?
Maybe, or I wonder if it's because I have the weird sketch cover that's that weird
card. Or you need to wash your hands after you jerk off.
Yeah, then how come all my comics aren't stuck together, huh, Phil?
I don't know. After the water damage, I bet you a lot of them do.
You know, the one thing I would
say... One of these days, you'll have a flood. Funny it is.
I'm keeping my comics on high ground.
You think it's a little too like cluttered, or like it's almost like a Bocello, where there's like a lot of stuff going on in the background. You don't exactly know what everything is. Not that you need to know specifically what every item might be.
But I think that they tell so far in the first issue, like a story that seems to fit. But yeah, there are plenty of panels where there's no, it's either one or the other. Either you have literally no background, like a color background, or you have like a lot of detail, like, which is kind of interesting contrast.
I just look at the cover, and I don't know if I could tell you everything that's going on in the background of my cover. Obviously, yours is blank.
So mine's easy to read.
But it's because it's just all with one color, and I'm like, I don't know what all this like cool craziness is. But yeah, it does fit into the story. Like once Archer and Armstrong are like in the bag, they run across like all these like garbage monsters, and since they're like crushing our heroes, like the panels get really, really small. So like it makes sense from a storytelling perspective that
And I like I said, and I also think the contrast between, you know, you have all these detailed panels and then one that's just a solid color kind of, I think, draws your attention. Like, I think it's well used. I don't get the feeling it's like, oh, I ran out of time, so I'm going to stop doodling in the background.
But I would say that every Archer and Armstrong series, it seems to be like a little controversial with the fans, either with the content or like... If it's not going in the direction like they want it to go, since they have some other like, serious books and stuff like that.
Shouldn't the bag be kind of a big deal? Because I know I've been curious about the bag the whole time, because he's only used it like in the first volume, he only used it like twice or something like that.
Yeah, but I just don't want the bag to become a thing like every time they need to solve the like a plot, it'll be like Batman's utility belt, and he'd be like, here's a missile launcher or something.
I don't think they... I mean, they could, but they haven't seen...
Yeah.
I mean, and it lets them go to this weird world, which is good. And it also has that whole, like, by having that character been around, reminds me of our discussion when we were talking about, like, Atomic Robo and Hellboy and Z-Girl and all those. Like, these characters that exist over a length of time gives them an interesting storytelling angle with looking at the different eras.
Like, I don't know if they'll be... If all the adventures will be taking place within the bag and, like, we won't really get any outside... Like, they'll just be inside the bag, so, like, there'll be a whole issue just, like, in a hotel room and you won't see the wider Valiant universe. Like, if that's a concern to someone that wants it to be tied in with everything. But I also think that Archer's sort of sister here could, like, Maria could also, like, run off with the bag, like... To who knows,
I think that was the intimation at the end.
Yeah. So I think the book's hands anyways.
I've been half in the bag before.
Well, it's funny that Armstrong, like, usually is in the bag, and now he's literally in the bag while he's in the bag.
So.
Like, you got to get points for at least that.
All right, Phil. Or is it Steve's turn? The wheel has broken.
No. I read also a new number one. But it's not really a new number one in that it's a character we've seen around for decades now, and it has had various iterations in comic books by various companies. And this time it's from Dark Horse, and this is Tomb Raider number one. They've got a new Tomb Raider.
Oh, I got that. I didn't even read it yet.
I occasionally pick up a Tomb Raider thing here and there, depending on what the creative team looks like or what the angle looks like. I like the old Andy Parks back when Top Cow was doing Tomb Raider back in the day and having little crossovers with Witchblade and all that stuff.
Gail Simone even had a run, I think.
You know, it's a good idea with a character. If there's a good story, it'll work good. And I don't mind cheesecake art. And when it seems like when they go wrong with the character is when they're trying to like get away from that nature of the character. Like, let's really like cover her up and make her not something pretty to look at or something unique, and just make her another adventure hero type thing, or even worse, make her not be so adventure-y and make it a real cerebral adventure. This case, go ahead, Matt.
I was gonna say you might have comments like on the way they relaunched the new Vampirella and everything then.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't care for that book too much. I did check it out though. But here, the creators are Mariko Tamaki is the writer, and Philip Seavey provides the line art. There's also a sweet cover, as they all are, from Augustin Alessio, who we know from doing several Marvel covers in recent years. Lara Croft, you know the deal, right? She's Indiana Jones.
Relic Hunter.
The book opens with three pages of her... shown like raiding some tomb basically and risking life and limb to get her hands on what looks like a magic glow stick. And as soon as she gets her hands on it, we flash back to, for the rest of the issue, to the start of the adventure when she hears the call, so to speak.
But the end of the issue doesn't end with that scene again. It seems like that sequence is actually going to be far off. Laura attends a archaeology con, if you will, and meets up with a friend and does some Obi-Wan type training with this combat trainer who is going blind. But she teaches Laura to do some, you know, like covering up her eyes with the blindfold and listening to her senses and all that. So I'm curious to see how that's going to play out later in the adventure. She also gets solicited by some assistant of a professor who heard her speak at the conference to retrieve some mushroom of immortality that she actually has heard of. But she says, no, thanks. She's just not out for hire. And, you know, she's not doing that kind of thing right now. But later on, she's in the hotel and there's a fire alarm and the hotel gets evacuated. And in her evacuation, she comes across that professor's assistant dude dead, like in a hallway, tucked behind a corner. And he's got all like it looks like his mouth is full of oatmeal or something. Like I'm thinking some sort of organic matter, maybe fungus. So she decides to investigate what the deal is with the guy since he lost his life trying to solicit her help. And I'm guessing will likely take on his cause once she learns more. But I thought it was a good opening issue. It set things up. The art was good. She's pretty, but it's not drawn in a cheesecake manner. And there's enough of a plot driving it along. And it's simple enough, like a action movie plot, where it seems like it's going somewhere interesting so far, at least. So I'm going to check out the next issue.
Well, famous creator, right?
Are they?
I guess the whole think Canadian connection.
Well, you're the Canadian. You're my Canadian connection. So.
Oh boy.
You're not going to explain. You're just going to let us be ignorant Yankees.
Yeah, I think so. Well, except right. For Phil, that you know.
I don't know.
I was going to say Phil. We'll talk later.
I'm neutral. I don't like either country.
You're my Canadian dude now.
Well, no, I don't make a very good Canadian.
Hey.
I like maple syrup. That's about it.
There we go.
All right.
But hockey's dumb, and everything else is pretty much dumb. It's cold here.
But what comics did you have that you like, Phil, or didn't like?
That were Canadian?
I suppose.
Anything. You're up.
Oh, well, IDW. If you remember, they like to do their little weekly events. Like, remember when they had the zombie crossover? And then I think they had a Mars Attack where they, like, do it with some of their properties they have, like Transformers and stuff.
Don't they have some deviations or, like, what-ifs? Or, like, what if Cobra Commander took over the world or something?
Well, thanks, Kevin. Do you want to just talk about it?
No, that's all I know.
Does he marry Scarlet? Those are always the G.I. Joe issues that catch me when there's a cover of, like, Cobra Commander with his arms around Scarlet.
Well, yeah, well, it's exactly like Kevin said. These are what-ifs, basically. All the other events weren't very good. I never really liked any of them. But these are just one-shots instead of the normal two issues each. So there's an X-Files one where young Fox Mulder was abducted by aliens. Transformers, where Optimus Prime never died. G.I. Joe, where Cobra turns the table on G.I. Joe. And Ninja Turtles, where the Turtles join Shredder. And then I got Ghostbusters where they never cross streams. And the solicit for this sounded really cool because it takes place like 10 minutes after the movie or whatever. And it's like an apocalypse because they obviously lost, right? And the state puff Marshmallow Man's still out there. And so it's $5 American. So I'm guessing it was like $8 for me or something like that.
That's pricey.
Is it extra long?
Well,
the
story is 24 pages, and it's a really goofy story. Like, it's not what I expected at all. It's not serious at all. Like, the State Puff Marshmallow Man is kind of like an emo kid personality, and he shits out little, little marshmallow turds that just run around and cause chaos. Like, it's really goofy like that. Like, really not what I wanted in the slightest. But I would have enjoyed it maybe in an anthology or something. But yeah, so that's 24 pages, right? So I paid for, like, American, it was $5, like I say. So that's pricey right there.
So what was it, Canadian?
No clue. I never really pay attention because there's no price on this. It's just American. But yeah, so you get the 24-page story. Then you get a page of them just explaining why they picked this. And then you get three pages.
Let me guess, Phil didn't agree with what they explained.
No. Then you get three pages of the same picture on three pages. Just one's black and white, one's color, and one's just a sketch. Okay, fine, whatever. Then you get another picture, the same picture on two pages. And then you get an ad for the event, which is two pages. And then you get an ad, or sorry, a Ghostbusters reading guide. Let me tell you how this goes. Okay, first you read volume one, then you read volume two, then you read volume three. I think you can see where this is going, right? Yeah, you don't need this reader's guide. It's all in volumes, like numbered.
I'm thinking the Turtles one would be way more helpful where you're supposed to slot in the miniseries.
Yeah, so that's two pages. Then you have three pages for an ad for their ongoing Ghostbusters International. And that's it. And that's the extra content. Is that ridiculous or what?
Doesn't seem like a great value.
No, not at all. So, and yeah, so I was really just... So I'm definitely not picking up the rest if that's what they think extra content is ads.
Well, technically it is extra.
Yeah.
But just think, the next time you have hot chocolate and put little mini marshmallows in it, you'll be thinking of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man's little turds.
Yeah. They were cute.
Well, aren't turds always cute?
Depends how much you drank the night before.
Depends on how well formed they are.
Yeah.
Do we lose the wheel? Do we break it? Who's up on the wheel of destiny?
You are. And yeah. Look at where you're taking the conversation.
Well, let me rescue it. We have a local creator who made a webcomic that he put in print edition. Aiden Casserly. And Aiden, like, dressed up, and he did all these, like, super quick commissions. And that's how I actually remember he did martial law baking cookies for me.
What?
And I bought his thing. So he chose the, like, a very showmanship style, which still stay. Like, I bought this thing years ago. I mean, it collects web comics from 2010. And I don't remember when I bought it, but probably, you know, 5-6 years ago. And I still remember him and the sketch and everything. So that's another trick to do is have... It's kind of an elaborate presentation. But he's a storyboard guy, so you can go to AidenCasserly.com. And he also archived the Scapula comic. So there's a link there to the comic. I mean, I have the print one. You can buy the print one. He also has a... I think he's moved it to Patreon now. I don't actually back any Patreons. I do a lot of Kickstarters. I just don't like the ongoing micropayments. I don't mind paying a one-time thing. But I'm such a flake. Like, I know if I sign up for something, I'll forget. And before you know it, I've bought that dude a new house in the Bahamas or whatever.
But I know what our patron rewards would be already for either this podcast or Marvel Noise. It would be a DC episode. Like, hey, give us this amount of money and we'll give you a DC episode.
So, I'm looking at the comic right now. I like the art a lot.
Yeah. It's really... And Scapula, the lead guy, is this villain, but he's kind of a loser. So in his thing, he wears this kind of skull mask on it. And like I said, these are some stories from 2009-2010. So in the book, it's printed as one page, which is, you know, mostly, you know, 9 to 12 panels type of thing. And then, but there's ongoing story, like the first storyline, the Sicko 6, is like 9 pages. So each page is its own thing. But there, it's like they all team up, and it's all equally kind of losery characters. Like one guy has this big, he's kind of like he has a big hypnotic hat on top of his head. Like he's sort of a hipstery dude and everything. And, probably not doing a great job, but as Phil says, you can jump online and see the sort of art style to see if that happens to sort of grab you, because it's a lot of curves and funny lines, and so he toes the line between sort of trying to be a bad guy but mostly being pathetic, which seems very webcomic-y to me. I don't read a lot, but that seems like you'd have a bad guy who's the hero, but he's not good, nor is he particularly skilled at being a bad guy. And I have two volumes of this, but I have this one. And sort of following my theme before, he actually has indicia, but all it is his name and copyright. You know, it's him. He doesn't, I guess, didn't create a fake publishing company to publish under. So it's just under his own copyright.
They're pretty cheap online. Like, he sells them on his store for each volume is $10.
Yeah, and there's a lot. And it's on, at least some of it's on Comixology for pretty cheap. Like, he had some of the ones that were like 99 cents for like, I think it was a ton of content too. So if you see it and you like it on his website, you can always dial over to Comixology and pick it up and get a ton of content, probably even cheaper than getting it right from him. But he still, like I said, he does a lot of storyboards, but according to his website, he's still doing some shows, including WonderCon, which is coming up end of March over Easter weekend. I'll be at WonderCon. I doubt this show will come out in time, but afterwards I'll have to give a recap of all my wacky adventures for the first time ever. It's being held in the LA Convention Center. Used to be up in San Francisco, then it went to Anaheim, and now it's in LA. So it's the same people that do the San Diego Comic Book Convention, which some of you have probably heard of.
Maybe.
But Scapula, AidenCasserly.com. You can check out, you know, his other stuff too, but there are links to the Scapula series there from there, and you can look at the old ones for free as a webcomic or buy it from them or go to, like, there's a million ways to get content now.
Is that it? Is that all we have? Since we've been chatting it up quite a bit.
Yeah, I think we went a little long, but that seems like a pretty good episode.
Indeed.
But I'd like to thank the boys and all our listeners for tuning in to hear about some independent comics on Indie Comic Book Noise. And until Super Steve gives up podcasting, keep reading those independent comics.
And
how about Andrew for stepping up, being the unwilling host for tonight's episode, and maybe some of the previous ones too. So there you go. Thanks, Andrew.
Hey, we have to have some low quality episodes so they can appreciate your high quality ones, Steve.
Find us on Facebook, find us on Twitter, and listen to us over on Marvel Noise, our sister show.